WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? Yes, you are tuned into WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. It is Tuesday, February 28th, 2017, and man, I could do a five-hour show today, folks. Welcome to the show. On today's Current Sports, we will have plenty to fill your sports talk tummy. All right? On today's Current Sports, we will talk about the Michigan State football team. Again, spring practices are underway for Mark D'Antonio and company. But again, as I've been mentioning, we as media members have not been given a schedule. We have not been given a notification on any type of media availability when it comes to Coach D'Antonio or said players talking. Of course, the program has a ton of talk surrounded around it, seeing as though Michigan State football is in the midst of a sexual assault investigation. We will address Michigan State spring football, and we'll try to answer a pretty big question concerning the program. You don't want to miss that. We'll also talk about a lot of discussion on Kirk Cousins. That's right. Speaking of MSU football, right? Former Michigan State quarterback, great Kirk Cousins, is right now undergoing a ton of negotiation, whether or not to sign for another deal with the Washington Redskins or take his talents somewhere else. We'll break that down. We will also chat with Brian Callaway, lead prep sports writer for the Lansing State Journal. Brian will give us a complete rundown of girls high school basketball district playoff action. District action beginning yesterday. We'll give you a brief recap of what took place last night at various districts. And on the back end of the show, we'll have some conversation centered on the Michigan State women's basketball team. If you want to be a part of the convo, you know how to do that. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there. And, of course, I will read it live here on our airwaves, or you can even join us via Twitter at WKAR_sports or at Al Martin. WKAR. So multiple ways you can weigh in as usual. But hey, you know how we start the show. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, the Michigan High School Athletic Association Girls Basketball Tournament has begun yesterday. Some of the results from the opening round of district play in the Lansing area were Class A DeWitt over Waverly, 54-49 in the East Lansing High School District. Okemos over Parma Western, 40-39, a barn burner there in the Parma Western District. St. John's over Swartz Creek, 63-59 in the Flushing District. In Class B, you had Lansing Catholic getting a win over Lansing Sexton in the Fowlerville District, 69-36, the final of that one. Hazlitt over Lansing Eastern, 77-26 in the Fowlerville District as well. And some key matchups to look at in round two of district play, which will take place on Wednesday night. East Lansing will take on Grand Ledge at East Lansing High School at 6 p.m. Everett will take on DeWitt at East Lansing High School at 7:30 p.m. And Holt will take on Mason at Parma Western. Again, we will invite lead prep sports writer for the Lansing State Journal, who was out covering girls high school basketball district action last night, Brian Callaway, our dear friend, will join me live here on the airwaves in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. Tori Jankowska of the Michigan State women's basketball team has yet another accolade to add to her terrific senior year as she was named to the All-Big Ten First Team by the media and coaches yesterday. Jankowska was a unanimous selection among both groups. Jankowska was one of four Big Ten players to be named unanimous selections, a group that includes Big Ten Player of the Year and Ohio State guard Kelsey Mitchell. This is the fourth time in her four-year career Jankowska has been honored as an all-Big Ten player. Her freshman year, she was honorable mention, following that up with two straight second-team selections. MSU's Brandi Agee, Taya Reimer, and Taryn McCutcheon, who balled out, of course, at East Lansing High School, were all recognized as honorable mention selections as well. All right, the University of Michigan's Kim Barnes-Orico, head coach of the Michigan women's basketball team, was named Big Ten Women's Basketball Coach of the Year yesterday. Barnes-Orico was a consensus selection, becoming the first coach in program history to do so. Michigan has not had a women's coach receive even a share of the award since 2000, when Sue Guevara achieved that distinction.
Well, I think I've been fortunate to have great players in our program and players that believed in the vision, believed that they could come to Michigan and make a difference, as well as a tremendous staff. I think one of the greatest things we have this year is great chemistry, and our staff has stayed together for a number of years, and it's really made a tremendous difference. They work incredibly hard. They spend a lot of time with our players, really working on player development, and an enormous amount of hours working on getting our team to where we are today.
Barnes-Orico has led the Wolverines to a 22-5 record, 11-5 in Big Ten play this year. Good for third place in the Big Ten. Good enough for a double bye in the Big Ten tournament, which begins this week. All right, Western Michigan football team, in its first year under new head coach Tim Lester, received some bad news yesterday when junior linebacker Robert Spillane announced he was leaving the program. Spillane was granted a release from his scholarship, allowing him to transfer anywhere and play immediately. He was an all-MAC second-team selection last year under former coach P.J. Fleck, who, of course, left for Minnesota. Spillane led the Broncos with 111 tackles last year. He also recorded three INTs, two forced fumbles, and a safety during his 2016 campaign. In spring training action for the Detroit Tigers out in Lakeland, Florida, the Tigers beat the Atlanta Braves yesterday 10-7. Detroit scored eight runs in the eighth inning to rally and defeat Atlanta. Jordan Zimmermann, who figures to be a key part of the starting rotation, looked solid in his two innings of work yesterday. Tigers star first baseman Miguel Cabrera had a two-hit performance and also knocked in a run for Detroit. But it was catcher Miguel Gonzalez's two-run single in the eighth inning that put the Tigers up for good. Anibal Sanchez also made a spring debut in relief of Zimmermann and looked very much like the Sanchez of last year, giving up three runs on his four hits in the third inning. The Tigers are back in Grapefruit League action today. Actually, right now, first pitch has been thrown as they take on the New York Yankees. Daniel Norris making his spring debut, and the Yankees ace Masahiro Tanaka also on the mound for the pinstripe. The Detroit Pistons are back in action tonight as they play host to the Portland Trailblazers. At the Palace of Auburn Hills, Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, and company travel in with a slightly disappointing record of 24-34, also having split their two games since the All-Star break. These two teams met previously in what was perhaps the most exciting Pistons game of the year when Detroit defeated Portland 125-124 on Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's three-pointer in double overtime. Tip time set tonight for 7:30 p.m. and can be found on Fox Sports Detroit. The Detroit Red Wings will head out west tonight as they travel to Vancouver, Canada to take on the Canucks. The Canucks may be a couple men down, dealing with perhaps one of the more bizarre stories in sports recently, as five players have been dealing with a mumps outbreak. Wow. Chris Tanev, Nikita Tramkin, Troy Stretcher, Marcus Granlund, and Mike Chaput were quarantined on Friday due to the outbreak, but Stretcher and Tanev have since been cleared. However, two more players and the athletic trainer have begun to show symptoms as well. Oh, I just hope none of the Red Wings get sick. Man, wishing those brothers well, though. Puck drop scheduled for 10 p.m. on Fox Sports Detroit. And last but not least, the Pittsburgh Steelers have placed a franchise tag on former Michigan State running back Le'Veon Bell, ensuring Bell will not hit the free agent market this offseason. Bell had expressed interest in remaining with the team, and the tag allows Pittsburgh to make sure that is the case while they negotiate perhaps a long-term deal. Bell was named to his second Pro Bowl last year after running for 1,268 yards and contributing 616 yards receiving as well. Bell is one of the top dual threat runners in the game, finishing second in the league in receptions for running backs and fifth in the league in rushing yards despite missing the first three games of the year. Bell is set to make $12.3 million under the tag. He is currently rehabbing a groin injury he suffered in the AFC Championship game against the New England Patriots last season. Also being reported that the Vikings' Adrian Peterson has been let go. He is now a free agent. How about that? Breaking news there, folks. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's start the show. Yes, taking you back to the 80s to begin today's show. New Shoes, I Can't Wait. One of my favorite old school joints there. I can vibe to that all day. Welcome, welcome, welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Phone lines are open. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Again, we are live streaming the show as we normally do at Facebook.com/Current Sports. Again, also join the convo by tweeting me at Al Martin, WKAR, or at WKAR underscore sports. You know, it's one of those days, you know, that's how it always is at the very beginning of the week. Just a ton of news coming in left and right. One of those days where I could really do a 5-hour show. My goodness. So much going on. You know, I want to start with story time just really briefly here because I found this to be comical but yet unsettling at the same time. One of my good friends from back in college by the name of Chris Burtley, a real good friend of mine, we actually met before I even started taking classes at Michigan State during ALP. Oh, actually the Magic program. I'm sorry, the Magic program here at Michigan State. And Chris, a good friend of mine in college, and you know, and Chris is from Flint, Michigan. And he has since gone to law school, doing some great things now. And Chris is really good friends, best friends actually, with Mark Ingram, who of course is a running back with the New Orleans Saints. And of course, he is also a Heisman Trophy winner. Mark Ingram, just one of the best players to ever pick up a college football, right? And I got a chance to meet Mark when I was in college. And this is when Mark was doing his thing at Alabama. Before he really blew up, Chris threw this huge pool party out in Flint Town. Got a chance to meet Mark. And just a really good, humble guy, right? But get this. So last night, I'm up late, you know, like I always am. You know, I was watching NBA basketball last night, Houston in Indiana. On TNT, and my phone starts blowing up, and it's from Chris. And we're all in this GroupMe message, and Chris is like, Al, man, oh man, do I have a story for you. So I had seen on Chris on his Snapchat that he had a story where, you know, on his Snapchat where he's out in London right now. Mark Ingram And a few of his New Orleans Saints teammates, along with Chris, are out there. And they're like shooting this really cool commercial, it looked like, and or promos maybe, because the Saints will be out in London. And they'll be playing a game out there. So Mark, I guess, thought it would be kind of cool to visit before they take on the Miami Dolphins at Wembley Stadium later on this year. And really cool. You know, I get all my inside stuff when it comes to the Saints and Mark Ingram through Chris. And on Snapchat, I'm seeing all this stuff going on. And all of a sudden, I see Chris and Mark. They're in like a cab. And they're like, they're laughing it off. But you could tell they're pretty perturbed as well, right? And Chris is in the cab, and he's on his Snapchat. And Chris is like, you guys would not believe what just happened. We go to this club after having a great dinner at some restaurant out in London. And they go to this club. It's Mark, Chris, a few other teammates of Mark's, like Sterling Moore, Von Bell, B.W. Webb. They decide to go to a London club by the name of Cirque Le Soir out in Soho. And get this, they get to the front of the club where, by the way, they also had reservations at the establishment. They get to the club and this happens. And this is coming from, I'm reading directly now from Mark's Twitter page. Quote, we pull up to Cirque Le Soir. Fancy name. Where we have reservations, and this is what they tell us. They told us that we are six big guys and are two, quote unquote, urban. But nobody's taller than 5'11". And then there's a picture of you can see a picture of Mark Ingram with Chris. Chris is in the back. He's like in the back in the middle. You can also see in the picture Moore, Bell, and Webb, and they're all smiling, you know, about the incident. And it's funny because I saw Chris's story, and then all of a sudden I see Chris at the end of the story. He says, you know, this is when it helps to have famous friends. And then, you know, I'm like, okay, Mark is probably going to weigh in on this. And Mark did. Mark, again, as I said, he tweeted out what the incident. And all of a sudden, this thing blows up. If you just go on Twitter and go to the search bar and put in hashtag too urban, there is a ton of dialogue on this. But it amazed me because as soon as Chris sent me the message on group, he's like, Al, this is about to blow up, dude. You got to talk about this on your show. You got to get us on your show. And I'm like, dude, I would love to have yourself and Mark Ingram on the show. So I'm in the process of right now trying to get both Chris and Mark on the Current Sports. We'll see how that goes because Mark is a very busy man, and for goodness sake, they are in London right now. But, you know, what's so funny, though, is that on the website, Cirque Le Soir says it's London's most A-list club and decadent circus. And a lot of famous guests, celebrity guests have been there, such as Lady Gaga, Leonardo DiCaprio, Kanye West. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And then you start to see the story really blow up because, you know, other players in the NFL start to weigh in on this conversation as well, such as Benjamin Watson, who tweets out, quote, not too urban for NFL to have us performing over there, though. Yeah, this thing really got a lot of steam. But, you know, it just gives you a peek into our world, folks, you know, and it's been well documented in recent months, in recent years, about the different racial problems here in America. But this also lets you know that this isn't just an American problem. So, yeah, hopefully we'll have Mark on the show to talk about this incident, right? Because, you know, talking with Chris, I know Mark would love to come on, but, you know, he's Mark Ingram, so I have to go through his agent, probably get it okay with some member from the PR staff of the New Orleans Saints, and then go from there. But man, oh man, that was the most interesting thing that happened while I was in my little cocoon at my apartment yesterday. So 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. I want to move on from that, though, and talk about Michigan State football for a second before we bring on our guest, Brian Callaway of the Lansing State Journal, because, you know, this is an interesting time for Michigan State football. because, you know, as I mentioned before, usually around this time of the year, intermingled with all of the high school girls and boys postseason basketball talk, along with the postseason runs of the Michigan State women's and men's basketball team, around this time of the year, I'm also bringing you coverage of Michigan State spring football, which began, actually, the first of 15 practices began on Saturday. The spring game will take place on April 1st. Usually, Mark D'Antonio comes out and kind of gives a rundown of some of the big storylines taking place for the team. You know, he'll go through the running backs and the wide receivers and the quarterbacks and the defense. I mean, he'll go through the entire roster. Position battles, right? Yet, us as media members have not been given a schedule. We have not been given any sort of notification as to anything pertaining to spring practices as Michigan State prepares for that spring game. And, you know, you look at it, and there's one reason why here. Let's keep it real. Michigan State football undergoing three investigations. One, a criminal investigation into alleged sexual assault involving three unnamed football players. We have, and you guys have been following that story. We have not been able to confirm the names of those football players that are said to be tied to also suspended football staff member, that being recruiting coordinator Curtis Blackwell. Also, another investigation is a Title IX inquiry into the handling of those allegations. And the third is an examination of the entire football program by an independent external law firm. So three investigations swirling around the Michigan State football program. That, let's be real here, that's the reason why we have not been able to step into the door of Michigan State football and examine the program when it comes to spring football practices. We also brought to you the news via our Quick Hit headliners, news that actually broke on a Friday evening concerning a projected starter in John Reschke leaving the football program due to comments that he made to an unnamed, now former, teammate of his. And you know, I get it. I totally get why we have not been given a schedule for Michigan State spring football. But, you know, I can only attack this from this angle. Because, you know, I'm not going to be one of those guys who is going to speculate and bring up rumors. I know you guys are all interested and want to know who the Michigan State football players are that are being investigated in this whole thing. What's the update on it? Blah, 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 right? You guys want to hear, you know, further recent update as to what is taking place. And we can't bring that to you because, again, this is an investigation. Nobody is labeled as guilty or innocent here. I'm not going to comment on that. But what I can comment on is exactly what is the perception of the program right now. And I want to pose this question to you all because I thought about this as well. With us not able to report on spring practices and drills for MSU football, as the days go by, what sort of picture does this paint on the program? Because I sat back and thought about it, and this is the conclusion that I came to. Mark D'Antonio, before the spring game takes place on April 1st, and that is going to be a situation where Mark and players are going to be forced to talk because it's the spring game. But before that takes place, Mark is going to have to come out and address the media and the public in regards to what has taken place this offseason. I believe the longer that Mark waits, the louder the noise becomes. And I do believe he will make a statement and will hold a press conference before the spring game, because you don't want that obvious distraction dominating headlines before the game and even during the game and after the game. If Mark just comes out, addresses the public, addresses the media, and gives us an update or a statement on the sexual assault investigation, how the program doesn't tolerate it, we're doing all we can to get to the bottom of it, and heck, he doesn't even have to field questions. It's not like Mark has to sit up there, because we all know Mark, he doesn't like those press conferences. You know, every once in a while, he'll crack a joke here and there, but you could tell the demeanor of Mark. He's so calculated when he goes to that podium. Mark is one of the most calculated coaches you ever find up at that podium during those press conferences, week to week. Mark doesn't like that, but you know, he doesn't have to field questions in this whole thing. If he just goes to the podium, reiterates a stance of how the program does not tolerate sexual assault. We're trying to get to the bottom of it. We're moving forward now. We're focused on spring practices, spring drills. We're focused on trying to get better. If Mark just goes out, gives that kind of a statement, and then keeps it moving, again, he doesn't have to take questions, and just keeps it moving, I think that will do a lot on easing the dialogue of fans and media personnels like myself moving forward when discussing this team. And I do think Mark will. Mark D'Antonio has shown over the years that his program is all about integrity. It's all about character. And I think that this may be a situation where Mark D'Antonio was just thinking a little bit too much. You know, there's a lot going on. There's a lot going through his head, I'm sure. Again, and not to mention, you're coming off a season where you won with three games. There's a lot going on here. I get it. And I do think Mark will issue a statement. And when he does, I think a lot of Michigan State fans, because I tell you what, you guys wouldn't believe it. If you were to look at my email inbox right now, I mean, it's just every day someone hit me up, Al, can you give us an update on what's taking place with the MSU football team? Al, do you know what the names are? Al, have they come out and said anything? Or do you know when there's going to be a timeline? It's crazy. When I talk to MSU football, when I talk about MSU football, I should say, with fans out there, with listeners out there, that is the number one conversation on their tongues. Because, again, the longer Mark waits here, and lets this thing boil up, the worse it gets. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Real briefly here, before I move on and keep this thing pushing, I want to invite to the show our engineer, Isaac Constance, from New Orleans. Today is officially Mardi Gras. Is that right?
Correct.
That Tuesday, Poonski is everywhere. This is the day where America gains at least 5 pounds on that waistline, right?
Well, New Orleans gains 15 because it's king cakes down there, not Poonskis, which are actually, we had some good ones at the office yesterday. I've only had the more or less gas station ones in the past, and I just couldn't really separate that from jelly-filled donuts in my mind. But, you know, good ones actually do taste pretty good. But they're not king cake. Brought some into the office yesterday. Actually got the baby, which means that I've got to bring it next year. But, yeah, it's a jolly day across the country, especially in New Orleans. But, you know, on this topic, Al, of MSU football, I'm going to differ with you on one point, because I do think, actually, that Mark D'Antonio needs to field questions. I'm not saying that he needs to answer all of them. I'm not saying that he needs to reveal the names immediately before an investigation concludes, or that he needs to do anything drastic for this program. But I think when you don't field questions, when you don't take the podium with an intent to inform people, when you just give a hand-tailored press release, it gives the impression that, you know what, there's even more to hide. And I think right now that's what the MSU program is emitting as an image of itself that we've got a lot to hide and we don't want to share it. You know what? Maybe they do. Maybe it's not as everybody fears. But the thing is, you need to go to the program, go to the podium, and say that we have a responsibility to our players, our fans, everybody attached here, that we're going to let you know what's up. Plain and simple, just let you know what's up. It doesn't mean you need to give the full detail. I agree with you that they need to reveal more, but I think answering a few questions would go a long way as well.
Well, I think, and this is the reason why I say he doesn't need to take questions, Isaac. This is a legal matter now, and this is such a sensitive topic now. And again, no one has been claimed as innocent. Nobody has been claimed as guilty. So if you do ask Mark any question, you already know the answer you're going to get. You know
well,
what I mean?
Like
you're
I said, get, he can be vague. I'm okay with him
he's gonna
pleading
have to
the
be
fifth.
Vague. Yeah,
but I'm
right.
just saying I think he should still be up there. And if he is asked something he's not comfortable answering or that he legally can't answer,
right,
then
exactly.
I'm okay with him saying, you know what, we're still in an investigation right now. We're going to wait till that concludes.
Exactly.
I've got no problem with that.
It's such a sensitive topic that you know what is going to come out of Mark's mouth if you ask him, okay, hey, can you give us the names of the players? What allegedly happened? What is Curtis's involvement? That all is going to be given a, I can't comment on that right now, refer to my opening statement and keep it pushing. We already know the answer we're going to get there. So just based on how sensitive the topic of this sexual assault investigation is, we all know what's going to come out of his mouth. So I think that moving forward, though, again, to throw some water on the fire a bit here, just to sprinkle some water on the fire here, Mark has to come out and say something, because the longer he waits, let's just say, and I don't think this would be the case, let's just say Mark waited past the spring game to issue a statement. That looks horrendous. That looks really, really ugly, because then you go back to your statement about having something to hide. That really makes it look like you have something to hide if you wait that long and let this firestorm continue to boil up as the days and as the weeks go by. What do you think about the situation with Michigan State football? And again, no statement, no update from the MSU football program, no statement from head coach Mark D'Antonio. We're taking your calls on that. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Later on this hour, we are going to break down what is taking place with former Michigan State quarterback Kirk Cousins and the Washington Redskins. Because when you break down the numbers, boy, oh boy, Kirk has an opportunity here to really get paid. And I really believe that the Redskins have made a tremendous mistake. I'll elaborate on that and so much more. On the other side of our first break, we'll chat with Brian Callaway, lead prep sports writer for the Lansing State Journal. He'll talk girls high school basketball, district playoff action. He'll even weigh in a bit on the Michigan State women's basketball team as the Big Ten tournament for them begins out in Indy on Thursday. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. That's our engineer, Isaac Constance, giving us some funky New Orleans flavor. Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Al Martin. Isaac, what's your favorite part of Mardi Gras?
Well, I was saying every single year, and it's kind of sad for me this time of year, honestly, not being back home for it. But every time, we live in uptown New Orleans, so we ride our bikes down. It's about a 15-minute bike ride, 20-minute bike ride, ride our bikes downtown, see all the freaks out in the streets. Really, that's what it is. It's a freak show. It's a freak show. I mean, you know, everybody's costumed. I've costumed in the past. My most outrageous one was actually Lil Wayne. I had to ornately draw all the different tattoos on my arms. I had the cross right in between my eyebrows. You know, a testament to one of the greatest hip-hop artists of all time, rappers of all time. But anyway, so it's always a fun time. But I was saying that Mardi Gras, people don't realize this, but pro tip for any of our listeners who are thinking about going down, you don't go on Mardi Gras Day. Mardi Gras Day is the culmination of a season of festivities. What you want to do is you want to draw it out as long as you can, because the week before, the week and a half before, there are parades every night, every day, and that's what you want to go to. But Mardi Gras, listen, we still party it up, but everybody's exhausted. So if you can squeeze it into that week before, you're doing it right. But my favorite thing is just going down, just the emotion and the sentiment in there, so jovial.
Gotta love it. Happy Mardi Gras to those out there. And you know what? You brought in a king cake yesterday, Isaac, and that is my first time ever having a king cake off the chain. Any of our listeners out there that have never had a king cake or don't know what the heck it is, please hop on your laptops and Google it and order you one ASAP, because it's great. And I had it yesterday, and I didn't know that the tradition here, you put like a baby, not a real baby, that'd be against the law, but like a toy baby, like the size of your pinky, probably even smaller than that. They bake a baby inside of the cake, and whoever eats the cake and eats the baby, well, not, you don't eat the baby. Well, you eat the cake.
Some people do, unfortunately. You know, that's a hazard of the whole festivity and tradition.
It's like a little toy, and whoever eats it and gets the baby, it's like, is it good luck or something? What's it supposed to symbolize?
Well, it's good luck when you're a kid. Like I always say, you always wanted to get the piece with the baby when I was in third or fourth grade.
Okay.
But then as you grow up, you realize, man, whoever gets the baby has to buy the next king cake.
Oh, so that's what it is.
It is good luck, but at the same time, man, you also got to spend another $10, $15.
Got to love that. All right, Poonchkies. I'm going to have to buy me a box after work today and then immediately hit
no
the
doubt.
Gym. For sure. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Oh, how about that? Wow, I feel like Nostradamus right now. As soon as if you're just not joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, I went on a bit of a spiel on how I believed that Mark D'Antonio needed to issue a statement before the spring game, right? Based on what has taken place with the football team, Michigan State football, right? You know, there's three investigations kind of tied together when it comes to sexual assault at the program. And Mark D'Antonio, you know, I said he needs to come out and say something. Well, I'm seeing here, this is coming from our Current Sports PA, Grant Essenmacher. Mark D'Antonio has just released a statement that he will answer questions when the time is appropriate. So he's released a statement here, and this is coming from, and I'm going to look this up. This is coming via Twitter. He has released a statement. And I guess you could say he's released a statement that he will hold a presser when the time is appropriate. Is that what I'm getting here? And the Grant is behind the glass saying, yeah. So, and I can read a bit of it here because I'm looking here online right now, and there is an official statement from Mark D'Antonio. Bear with me here. I'll kind of go through it. Quote, with spring practice beginning last week and in preparation for a new season underway, I feel it's important to reinforce the core values and beliefs that have built and defined this program during my time at MSU. Since arriving here 11 years ago, my passion has been to lead a program that fosters a culture of integrity, respect, and accountability, both on and off the field. That will never change. I have high standards for the program and expect all of our players and staff to conduct themselves in a manner that reflects the values and principles of Michigan State University. Our goal is to develop young men of character who graduate and make a positive impact on society. Regarding the ongoing investigations taking place within our program, the allegations are something we are extremely concerned about and taking very seriously. We took immediate action by suspending those involved as soon as we were notified of the situation. Our action is separate from the ongoing criminal and administrative investigations. Those processes will determine if a crime has been committed and also if any university policy has been violated. Mark Hollis and the university administration have set forth expectations for this program that I fully support, and we have gone to great lengths to consistently educate all members of the football program on our standards of conduct. I expect all members of the football program to live up to those standards, and I'm doing everything necessary to help throughout this difficult process. When the time is appropriate, I will be able to answer questions regarding our program and discuss our team. At this point in time, we have to respect the process of the investigations for everyone involved. Again, a statement just released from Michigan State head football coach Mark D'Antonio. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. We do have callers on the line right now. We've got our dear friend and caller, Mike, from Saginaw. Mike, what's up, my man? What's on your sporting noggin?
How you doing there? How you doing? Before I get to the sports questions, I just want to see, did you see Get Out this weekend?
I did. It was one of the best movies I've ever seen. I have to put it immediately in my top five movies of all time. Was having this discussion yesterday on that. It is a brilliant piece of work, I must say. Mike, I got to go see it again.
All right. I was going to tell you before I talked about the men that the women are playing in the Big Ten tournament. You know, Tory Jankowski's high school team up here is undefeated.
Freeland is undefeated because she's from Freeland, Michigan, right? She went to Freeland High School, right? They're undefeated right now. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if they probably wasn't undefeated when she was going there, but her high school team is undefeated. They don't even have I don't know if they got any Division I type talent on their team or not, but they undefeated, so. Wow. I'm kind of waiting on the high school tournaments anyway, so.
I hear you. So you're excited about high school girls and boys basketball postseason action,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah, high school girls and boys basketball. What I wanted to know, Elmire, before I ask you about Michigan State, you've seen Connecticut play on television and everything. Have Connecticut ever come up to Michigan and played Michigan State?
Connecticut men or women?
Women's team.
No, but it's funny you ask that because Michigan State will be taking on Connecticut next year. I have to look up the date here, but I remember that press release. We actually talked about that briefly, Isaac, on Current Sports. That was a few weeks ago. But they will play next year, I believe. Mike, I'm going to Google that for you real briefly here. But, yeah, they will meet. They've never met before.
Okay. I'd like to talk to you about the men's team now. I've been watching them all season, and I just noticed that Ward and Cassius Winston has gotten much better since the conference season has come along.
Yeah,
I really think that's why they're in a position like they in, because, I mean, even Miles Bridges, you know, the last time I called you, I kind of got on him about his defense, but he's gotten better too. So that goes to show you that they are listening and they're being coached. So that's really great. What I want to know is, too, when can you redshirt? You have to redshirt before the conference season get there or what?
Yeah, and, you know, hey, and don't forget the fact that Harris is a transfer from West Virginia, and he had to sit out 1 year at that. So, no, he's going to be done. He's going to be looking forward to testing the waters of professional basketball after this year, Mike.
What about Gavin Schilling? Is he going to
Gavin Schilling, it's expected, again, not confirmed, but it's expected that Gavin will look to medical redshirt and then come back for a final year with Michigan State next season.
All right, then. Since you got callers on the air, I'll let you move it on to other callers, and thanks for taking my call.
Thanks a ton, Mike. And again, Mike, Michigan State women's basketball will play in the UConn, in the PK-80 Invitational, the Phil Knights Invitational on November 25th next season. So that should be pretty fun, too. I mean, UConn, the dominant team in women's college basketball under Gino Auriemma. They're always fun to watch. That should be an interesting matchup for Susie Merchant and company, though. All right, well, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. Speaking of girls and boys high school basketball postseason action, right now we have on line one, Brian Callaway, lead prep sports writer for the Lansing State Journal. Brian's going to give us a brief rundown on what took place last night in the opening round of girls high school hoop district action. Brian, how are you doing, my friend?
Hey, not bad, Al. How are you doing?
Always good to hear your voice. I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. Now, Brian, I want to ask, which district were you at yesterday, and what was the result, my man?
Yeah, I was over at East Lansing, where DeWitt and Waverly, the two top teams that were in the CAA she read this year, played for the third time this year, and DeWitt was able to get out the narrow victory over Waverly, and both of those teams had split their two meetings in the regular season.
Yeah, and I want to elaborate on that game in just a moment, Brian. Again, that was a 54-49 win for DeWitt over Waverly in the again in the East Lansing district. But Brian, when evaluating this entire local landscape, which district do you believe to be the most challenging for some of our local teams?
I definitely think the district at East Lansing, and then also a district at Carson City Crystal that featured Bath, Langsburg, Kawama, Westphalia, and Carson City Crystal. I mean, I think those were by far kind of the two toughest girls basketball districts when you kind of look at how things were shaped out. You know, in the district at Carson City Crystal, I mean, there was four or five teams that won 15 games in the regular season in that district. When you look at, you know, Bath, which was a league champion, and then Paloma Westphalia and Langsburg finished right behind them. And then, you know, Byron and Carson City Crystal also, you know, won at least 15 games as well, too. So that was a pretty stacked Class C district. And obviously Bath and Langsburg had to meet in the opening round with Bath winning. And then you look at the district of East Lansing, I mean, there's four teams that had at least 14 wins in that district during the regular season. When you actually look at DeWitt and Waverly, and then you also look at East Lansing and Grand Ledge as well, too. So, I mean, it's just a very challenging opening, you know, stages of the girls' basketball tournament for several teams that were in those districts.
Yeah, and you talk about the tourney, Brian. It's always a bit unfortunate, especially when you have some of those early round matchups against two good teams. And you look at Lansing Waverly, a team that finished second in the CAAC Red Conference, and they have to get out this early. And, you know, in DeWitt, you know, I also want to call out DeWitt sophomore Annie McIntosh, who had 16 points for them last night. But it's always a bit unfortunate when you have just some of these really good teams in our area have to go out so early in the tournament.
Yeah, it is, and I mean, it just happens all the time, you know. And you know, I know the talks have been underway about changing it, and you know, hopefully getting it seeded. I know a lot of different coaches would like to see this tournament seeded, where some of these matchups would be avoided. So you're not seeing, you know, two teams like, you know, Waverly and DeWitt, or even in the past when, you know, Hazlett was really good and Williamsville was also really good. I mean, both of them meeting in the opening round of a Class B district tournament. I mean, I remember that a couple of years ago. But, I mean, you know, they're hoping that, you know, maybe in the near future here that there will be some seeding and some of these matchups can be avoided, you know, going forward.
DeWitt will now take on Everett on Wednesday. Brian, just kind of preview that matchup for us.
Yeah, you know, obviously DeWitt's the number five team in the state, and it's a very, very strong team. And, you know, that's that DeWitt-Everett is one of the matchups at East Lansing. But the main matchup there on Wednesday is East Lansing versus Grand Ledge. These are two of the top three teams in the CAAC Blue. Obviously, East Lansing went unbeaten throughout the CAAC Blue this season. So it'll be the third time, and East Lansing will have to get past Grand Ledge a third time. So I think that's kind of the big matchup on Wednesday as far as when you look at things in that district. And probably, you know, one of the better, you know, semifinal matchups that we have going on in the area among teams. I mean, I think Bath and Paloma Westphalia is going to be a very strong matchup as well, too, when you look at the two top teams in the CMAC meeting in the district semifinal as well, too. So I think that's going to be a very strong matchup when you look at Wednesday slate of games.
Yeah, certainly. And Brian, you know, to briefly just hit on Waverly before moving on here again, with Waverly being eliminated last night, senior Alicia Smith, who will actually be taking her basketball talents to Penn State next year, that ideally was her last game, her last high school game for the Waverly Warriors. Brian, what makes her such a special player, and how do you assess her success at the next level?
Well, I think the thing with Alicia is that she still is kind of a raw talent. I mean, I feel like she's still, you know, touching the surface. And, you know, we saw some pieces of that, but I think we're going to see more as she goes on at the next level. And obviously, I mean, she did some nice things when she was down in the block yesterday, but obviously she plays a lot in the perimeter, and that's where she will be playing at the next level as well, too. But no, she's definitely a very talented player, and it'll be interesting to see what she can do over at Penn State under Coach Colquise Washington.
Which teams are your local favorites, Brian, to possibly make it to the big dance at the Breslin Center this year in girls' high school hoops?
You have to start with, you know, Williamson. I feel like Williamson's kind of been, you know, the best team in the area throughout the course of the season with the things that they've done. And I feel like, you know, that they have a very good chance to make some noise this year. Obviously, last year they got bounced in the regional. And, you know, the regional will be tough for them if they're able to get out of the district. But, yeah, I think this is a team that, you know, has some pieces that they can get some things done this year. And then I think the winner of this district in East Lansing, whether it ends up being DeWitt, East Lansing, you know, Grand Ledge, I think that team will be able to make some noise. And historically, the person that has come out of that district has went on to make a pretty deep run. And, you know, obviously we saw East Lansing do that last year when they were led by Taryn McCutcheon, and they got all the way to the quarterfinal. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, teams like that that are tested and go through those things, you know, are typically, especially with the strong district that they're in, I mean, I feel like they can make some noise. And I also would say maybe the person that comes out of that district in Carson City Crystal could go on and make some noise as well, too. And you know, we saw a couple of years ago Lanesburg make a run out of that district to the Breslin Center as well, too. So those are, you know, a couple of teams I feel like they could have a chance to make a very lengthy run this March.
Brian Calloway, lead prep sports writer for the Lansing State Journal. Brian, I got to tell you, brother, you did an excellent job on your article entitled Sister Act 3, Siblings Connection Powers East Lansing, and your profile. And we've chatted about this earlier on in the girls' high school basketball year. But East Lansing, I didn't know there were three sets of sisters. I had just noticed when I was looking at the roster one game that there were, you know, I just kept seeing the name Nye pop up. And I'm like, oh, they have to be sisters, right? And you did a great job of interviewing the Nye sisters and also profiling two more sets of sisters that are a part of the East Lansing girls basketball team. For our listeners out there that didn't get a chance to read that article, just kind of give us a brief synopsis of it.
Yeah, well, East Lansing has three different sibling connections on their team. As you mentioned, you know, the Nyes, there's three of them. There's two twins that are freshmen, and then there's a junior, Ozane, and then there's Hampton, Jada Hampton, and her sister, Talia Hampton. And then, obviously, there's Amelia McNutt, who's a third-year varsity player for East Lansing, and her sister, Tori Kowicki McNutt, is one of the assistant coaches for Coach Rob Smith. So, and, you know, the good portion of this team is related, and you know, it's kind of been something that's been a unique thing that's been a part of East Lansing's success. And, obviously, the junior players, Amelia McNutt, Jada Hampton, and Oz Nye are the three leading scorers for this East Lansing team. And you know, their siblings have also been contributing to that team as well this year as well, too. And one unique thing about it is all those players will be back next year as well, too, because not a senior in the bunch. They're pretty much all juniors and freshmen. So they'll have another year to play together on the court next season.
That is absolutely remarkable. And when chatting with those sets of sisters, Brian, do they sometimes butt heads, or is it mostly a love connection for most of the time?
You know, there is sometimes other day butt heads. I mean, the younger ones kind of feel like the older ones are kind of being like their mom at times when they're giving them instructions on the court and things like that. But at the same token, I mean, they know that, you know, their older sisters have been through things before, and they're just trying to help, you know, them, best prepare them so they can contribute to the team when they are called upon to go into the game. So, you know, I think that it's mostly, you know, they understand, you know, although it can be frustrating at times for them when they kind of feel like, you know, hey, this person's trying to be like my mom or whatnot. So,
yeah, it's a really cool story. If you haven't seen it, folks, again, you can just simply go to LansingStateJournal.com, and it's entitled Sister Act 3, Siblings Connection Powers East Lansing. Did you come up with that headline, Brian? I thought that was pretty clever as well.
Yeah, I did. I was just messing around with things. Like, you know, I had to figure out the Sister Act and three sets of them. So.
Classic movie. I tell you that. All right, Brian, where are you going to be at tonight? Because I know boys high school regular season action is coming to a close very, very soon. There's a lot of games happening tonight. Will you be out there?
I won't be out tonight. I'll actually be at Michigan State women's basketball practice this evening.
Okay.
As they get ready for the Big Ten tournament this week. But I know we will be out at the Holt-Williamson boys basketball game, which should be a very good game when you look at featuring two of the area's better boys teams this season.
And, you know, since you brought it up, that's a great segue into my final question here, Brian. MSU women's basketball, not able to get that double bye in the Big Ten tourney, a tough overtime loss to Nebraska over the weekend. Is this team already firmly in the NCAA tournament in your eyes?
You know, I think that they did enough. I mean, obviously getting the big road win over Michigan, you know, was a very big win to give them a second win over a ranked team. And then knocking off Penn State at home was very big. I mean, the Nebraska loss is a tough one, and also the loss that they had to Rutgers. Those are, you know, some blemishes that are on their NCAA tournament resume. I feel like that, you know, they can at least, you know, go down to the Big Ten tournament and then win, you know, a couple games. I mean, I think that would very much strengthen their case because, you know, if they were able to get past their Thursday second-round Big Ten tournament game, which would be against either Rutgers or Wisconsin, they would get another shot at Michigan. And I think another win over Michigan, I mean, would definitely push them for sure over and into the field. But, yeah, I mean, I feel like that they've had a decent body of work with some of the things that they've accomplished this season. But, you know, it always helps when you can do add on to that resume. And, you know, they're in control of things right now. So if they can get another couple of wins down in Indianapolis this weekend, I think that would go a long way.
Brian Calloway of the Lansing State Journal. Brian, thank you so much for your time, my man. Great job.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me, Al.
Let's hit our final break. When we come back, we'll put a bow on this Tuesday edition of Current Sports by briefly chatting about Kirk Cousins and the Washington Redskins. It's a bit of a fiasco. I'll explain. Don't go anywhere.
Echo, 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 Andy.
Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We have just under 2 minutes left in the show. Just briefly want to bring this to your attention, something to look just to look closely at before 4 p.m. tomorrow. Wednesday, again, at 4 p.m. is the deadline for many players out there. But in particular, I want to talk about Kirk Cousins. To franchise tag or not, that is the question the Washington Redskins have to answer when it comes to his contract. Get this, a franchise tag will amount to a one-year deal for $23.94 million in 2017 for Kirk Cousins. This means Cousins will be on the books in Washington for a two-season total of $43.89 million in guaranteed money. Are you kidding me? That is a ton of money. If Washington had offered Cousins a multi-year deal last offseason, that included $44 million guaranteed in base salaries of $20 million. He certainly would have taken it, but that didn't happen. He decided to bring Cousins along and get this. The option here, there's multiple options for Cousins to take, but here's one option that I really thought about. The option for the Redskins to let him go after 2017, if they decide to do that and enact the tag for next year, they would blow through $43.89 million. And really have no long-term answer to show for it. And when you put that in perspective, the last 2 years they have done this, they would have sunk $78.36 million into Cousins. That is a ton of moolah. We'll talk about that and so much more tomorrow. As always, folks, take care and be easy, people.